Hello and welcome to the Forbes India Cover Story podcast series in association with theindicast.com. My name is Abhishek, and this cover package focuses on newly listed companies relatively and what keeps them ticking over time. And on the call with me today are Forbes India's Nazreen Sultana and Manu Balachandran. Hi, Nazreen, Manu. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Abhishek. Good to be here too.
Thank you.
Hi, Abhishek.
Hi, Manu. Always fun talking to you. Nazreen, let's start with you. Why an IPO issue in March when I believe the boom was back a few years ago? So what's changed and why did Forbes India decide to have an issue dedicated to companies that have been listed recently?
That's right, Abhishek. And we've seen the primary markets bustling with new listings in 2020 and then 21. That was the record year when there were over 60 companies and around 1.18 lakh crore was raised through the IPOs. But the question is, why are we doing the IPOs now? Because we thought that this was the right time to do a check on how companies are performing, because many companies can hit the stock market. That's one thing. But how are they doing on the stock markets in terms of their stock performance or in terms of the quarterly earnings? Are they giving returns to the shareholders, those shareholders which went and made this public issue successful? Are they giving that money back? So that's the reason we thought it's a good way to look back and see who actually have survived the storm of the stock markets and the quarterly earnings seasons.
And how did you arrive at the list itself? And how did you choose among the few 100 companies, if not less?
So what we did was, Abhishek, just to have a perspective about how the market was just before COVID, because COVID actually upturned the entire market course. There was a 20% circuit, and then the few days later, the markets went up and hit 10% higher. And then there was a lot of IPOs which started in 2020. So what we did, just to be fair to all the companies, we looked at data starting from 2019. And just before that, it was 2017, actually, when there was a record number of IPOs in the market. We took numbers or the companies from 2019. So that makes around 5 years. And we made a pool of around 200 companies, those companies which had listed in that time frame. But again, you will see in the main board IPO, there would be an IPO size of 100 or maybe 5,000 also. So to be fair, again, to all of these companies, we created further buckets of according to the issue size. So we made four buckets in the category of 0 to 500, 500 to 1,000, 1,000 to 5,000. And after that, we looked at the subscription level. So if you remember in 2020, 21, there were companies which were getting more than 100 times subscription, meaning that there were more people waiting to get into the IPO before, and then they could not even issue the shares. So just to be fair, we went and also looked at companies which had in all of these buckets, which had more than 100 times subscription. After that, we looked at companies which had survived or stayed in the stock markets for 6 months. And then obviously that skewed the numbers to around 25. And the final thing was to look at how the companies performed in the last 6 months, because that is a testing time for companies to survive the market storm. There are uncertainties. The quarter earnings, we figured out around 10 to 15 companies, which looked good in terms of performance, stock performance, company performance. And of course, they did great on the first day of their listing and also in the IPOs.
Right. I think that first day is quite an interesting one, at least among people who may not be institutional investors, but there are folks who want to make a quick buck.
Absolutely,
From the IPO itself.
You know, that's a joke. I mean, it's called as listing pop. It's like how, see, of course, the notion is that you buy the IPO or you get in the company during the IPO phase. So you buy the company share in the IPO phase at a lower price. And the day when it gets listed, you sell the IPO as in the stock. So you get the percentage hike. And that's the listing pop, which all retail investors, they chase. And that's what keeps an IPO market ticking, actually.
Right. And let's talk about one of those outfits that you've written about. Manu, I'll bring you in here. You've covered Paras Defense. And Nazreen just talked about any company oversubscribed by 100 odd times, but Paras Defense was oversubscribed by 304 times when it went public in 2021.
It's not just about Paras Defense, Abhishek. It's mostly to do with defense companies in general. Some of the stories that we did, say, for instance, Mazagon Dock, AAR, whether it is Paras Defense, all of them have been big beneficiaries of Make in India program that the right. Prime Minister has been speaking about. And when we did the defense issue sometime earlier last year, we saw that with companies like Hindustan Aeronauticals Limited as well. They've all had a great run because the government has been stressing so much on manufacturing within India. They've put a lot of items that have now been banned for import. Companies like MTR, Paras Defense, they're in a sort of a peculiar position to tap into that particular opportunity. Now, say, for instance, with Paras Defense, they make lenses for submarines. Hmm. It's a very niche area. They're the only ones who are sort of doing that. It brings in a lot of money. The government obviously is pushing for more Indian companies to do that. And even those companies that have been listed for a while, they've seen a big uptick, like we had seen in the case of HAL, for instance.
Would these outfits also be in a unique position? You talked about lens as one of the optic solution is what it focused on. And it also had a partnership with ISRO. So when you have the likes of ISRO taking notice, you are assured of some amount of business to go with anyway.
Absolutely. And I think even, say, for instance, companies like Mazagon Dock, they get a lot of orders from the government. I mean, their entire order book is such based on what the government is going to give them. Similarly, for companies like MTR, Paras Defense, in the case of Paras Defense, optics, they're the only ones that ISRO has tied up with. Similarly, for MTR, liquid propulsion engines and the cryogenic engines, these are entirely manufactured by MTR. Those are used in the Chandrayaan mission and I think in the Gaganyaan mission and, you know, all of that. So it's sort of like a captive order from government agencies, whether it's DRDO, whether it's ISRO, whether it's Ministry of Defense. All of these guys are getting orders from the government. So the order book, as an investor, as you know, analyst, when you look at the company and look at the revenue outlook for the next few years, the order books are quite good and they're getting that from the government or even government agencies. And all of that as a result of the government's push for more manufacturing, for focus on Indian companies. I think that's what has helped these companies, I think, in the last few years.
You talked about Mazagon Dock shipbuilders, and I think all of us know it's been around for a while, but when I looked at the number, more than 250 years old, that, I mean, it's been around for a while. And staggering revenue, some 7,800 odd crores.
They're the highest amongst all the shipyards in the country. They make both submarines and destroyers. They're the only shipyard in the country that manufactures both. And the Indian Navy has got a massive plan to upgrade their, ships and destroyers and all of that, the fleet. So, you know, Mazagon is in a peculiar position because they actually will benefit significantly, you know, as and when more orders keep coming in. Because who are the competitors? There are some other government shipyards and then you have L&T, but that's that. And Mazagon has the bandwidth to do such projects. When investors look at companies like Mazagon, they've got huge potential. And you're just sitting, you know, at the tip of the iceberg right now.
Indeed. And how is, in that sense, Nazreen, Manu talked about, you know, these three outfits which have a certain amount of business that is assured from the government, big order books. You've had a chance to speak with the father-son duo at Tega Industries. First of all, what does it do? And in what business is it in? And how did you manage to snag them?
See, Tega Industry, again, they have a lot of orders from the government. Mm-hmm. When we were looking at the companies, we first thought that Tega Industries actually makes equipments for manufacturing and mining products. But they actually, when I started talking to them, I looked at the products that they have. What they did was they brought a revolutionary change in how manufacturing and basically mining was done. Mm-hmm. There's a certain steel plate which is used for mining products. And what Madan Mohanka did, the promoter of Tega in the 1970s, he replaced that with a rubber sheet. Now, that actually helped in increasing the capacity for the mining production. And it took a lot of years for the company to be in the size and shape and form it is now. And he had a long history, very interesting, very inspiring story about how from a Marwari family, of course, he went to IMA, but besides that, from a Marwari family, he became a promoter, first generation promoter, and he has brought the company to the shape, and it has businesses with South America and with the Brazil, I think. So more than the company, it's also an inspiring story about the man who built the company from the scratch from 1970s to now. And of course, his son has taken over. He's the MD now and he's taken over the operations now. He's basically helped build the company to foray into global footprints.
Yes, you're right that Madan Mohanka actually spent quite a bit of time at IIM Ahmedabad learning English because he thought that he could do better.
He has written two books also, like English. So for us, it's like our part of our lifestyle. But for for somebody to begin work at that time of India when ease of doing business was not easy, they took around 8 years to get government permission. That's not the case right now.
Right.
So that persistence and perseverance, I think, paid off, and it has become one of the large companies in its segment and very few competitors even now.
That was a different era altogether, where
Absolutely. You
even to get basic permissions, you had to stand in queue, irrespective of how big or small you were. And in the interest of time, Nazreen, anything else, Manu, either of you can chip in with what else can the reader expect beyond these longish essays on outfits who've done well after their IPOs?
Sure, Abhishek, I would like to take that. One interesting story, actually, which I keep talking about whenever there is an IPO conversation is about Mrs. Vectors. That IPO actually came in 2020. Now, remember, 2020 was not an easy time for anyone, especially for people who are not eating out. But Mrs. Vectors, and there was a lull period after the market recovered, there was a lull period in the primary markets. Mrs. Vector was one of the few companies which hit the public markets, did great in the IPO listing, and even still doing good in stock performance and in revenues. What they essentially do is they make buns and they supply to McDonald's and they make biscuits, confectioneries. I really feel proud that it's actually run and started by a female entrepreneur, which is very rare. That's one of the very inspiring story. And very quickly, if I can squeeze in one important thing is, in last few years, of course, we've been talking about a lot of new age technology companies like a Nykaa or a Zomato or even Paytm for that matter. But unfortunately, these companies actually didn't do well in terms of stock performance, giving back the money to its shareholders, even if their issues were subscribed, oversubscribed. And I guess that was a very sad story in 2023, because completely the entire companies from this sector actually were missing in the IPO market. So there was only Delhivery and Yatra Online, which were listed in the new age technology companies. But other than that, there was certainly no companies which came to stock markets. But now it looks promising because we have Ola Electric, we have FirstCry from the segments which look promising. We have three fantastic columns actually in this cover. One is written by Pranab Haldia, the Prime Database promoter. He's written about how this primary market, irrespective of this, they could be companies which may not be giving you returning the money in the short term, but overall the primary markets look very promising because SEBI regulations have tightened up. It is in favor of retail investors. So of course the primary markets is going to stay and obviously going to be booming from 2024, maybe a lull period during the elections, but it's going to be a good period for the primary markets. Second column I really want to talk about is written by Shankar Sharma, who's a veteran market investor. He's written about how a company becomes matured and why a company in its nascent stage itself should go for IPO, IPOs, and then give back the companies, give back people the opportunity to, you know, get back their money. He has given example of HDFC Bank and Infosys. A lot of good anecdotes he has. And I think a very interesting read that Shankar Sharma has put out in his column. And thirdly, on the Red Seer consulting column, they have talked about why the new age technology companies are here to stay. It could be a temporary blip, but new companies will come up in that sector.
Great, lovely. Thank you so much, Nazreen, for summarizing what the reader can expect. And Manu, for your time on this podcast. Thanks so much for joining in, both of you.
Thank you, Abhishek.
Thank you, Abhishek.